Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I'm with another New Havener himself, Mr. Rasheen Dixon. How you doing, Mr. Dixon?
Oh, man, Jose, I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Let's get right into it. How did you grow up, and where did you grow up?
I grew up right here in the city of New Haven, West Hill Projects Apartments. Matter of fact, I don't even want to say that because when we moved in, it was McConaughey Terrace. It was a beautiful place, you know, a melting pot of families, you know, Hispanics, Caucasians, Black people. And so it was a wonderful time at the time. And then we watched it slowly change. But that's where I grew up. And, you know, Mom had dreams and stuff. So we stayed there up until I was about 13, and then we was able to move into our first private home. And, but New Haven has been my upbringing and my savior.
Tell me a little bit about Mom. What's her name and what kind of woman?
My mom, her name was Sonia Dixon. God rest her soul. She worked for the city of New Haven Board of Education for many years. She was only 4'11", but most of the time the loudest person in the room. And when it came to children, she was very, very active, especially young girls. She was very active in their lives and trying to explain to them how they should carry themselves, how they should dress, how they should speak, you know. And she did that all through forming a cheerleading group in the school system, you know, but she was an extraordinary woman. You know, I will say, I always laugh and say, you know, people come up to me and they go, oh man, I remember your mom. She was a great person and she was so nice. And, you know, I look and I go, yeah, that's because you didn't live with her, you know, because I caught the hard end of the stick, you know, majority of the time because I was her child and she had great expectations for me. But, yeah, she was an extraordinary woman, man, real extraordinary.
You were sharing me your love of music. Tell me that one time you got that LL Cool J album.
So my mom, you know, in our house, we could listen to gospel, you know, R&B was okay, you know, like Luther Vandross during the time, Anita Baker, you know, it was no problem listening to that. However, it was more of the turn of rap music, and a lot of the older generation was against it. And I snuck the Cutlers. I don't know how many of you out there remember Cutlers, but I snuck to Cutlers. And I'm not going to say I snuck because I always went and bought albums and little 45s and, you know, but I went and got LL Cool J. I'm Bad. It was his album had just dropped. It was the album cover, him standing on top of the Porsche car, you know, in front of the apartment complex. I mean, you know. And I'm in the house and, you know, like many kids from my generation, I was a latchkey kid, key around my neck at the age of 5, letting myself in and out the house. However, I was about 12, 11 when I went and got this album and Mom was at work. You know, I knew she didn't get home till about 4:30, 5 o'clock. So I'm in the house after school. I'm jamming. Got the Bristol Hotel rocking. And, you know, I didn't hear my mom come in because the apartments was, you know, you come into the first floor. And, of course, I'm upstairs in my room. So I didn't hear the door open. But I did see when my room door came busting in. And this 4'11 woman, I know you're not playing this in my house. And yeah, she put them paws on me, boy. She put them paws on me. I had to turn it off. And you know, so for her, music was okay, but it had to have a message, a decent message with it, you know. Nothing to distort my brain or my thinking, you know.
So, one thing that I'm very impressed by you is your knowledge of your family history. It looks like you took the time to listen, and you retained a pretty good amount of it. You have someone who walked to Selma in your family, and it's part of a book, right?
Correct. My great-grandmother, Rosie Kaysen Williams, she is in a book called Black Woman. I have two copies of the book. One is in my mom's house in Alabama, which I found that book because when we were coming up, the book was real hard to get at the time. There was only a few copies in rotation. I know Yale had one during the time, and it was literally in a display box, and you couldn't get to it. So it was crazy. I went to Cooperative Arts and Humanities High School, and it was in the old St. Mary's building. So when St. Mary's moved out, they left their library intact. And I used to get to school. School started at about 8:30, 8:45. But I used to get to school sometime like 7:30, 7:45, because I would go in the music room and just pick things out on the piano, you know, because a lot of piano stuff I was self-taught, you know, and then I would apply it, you know, being a vocal, geared towards vocal performance. The things I was learning with the placing of notes on scales and stuff, you know, I would get to school early and, you know, practice in the music room. And this particular morning, something just led me to the library. And I was the only one in there, and I'm walking down one of the aisles, and I look, and there it's like the book just slapped me right in the face, like, pow, here I am. I pull it off the shelf. I start skimming. Boom, the same picture that we had copies of in the family, there it is in this book. I make a beeline straight for the main office with the book in hand. And my principal during the time, his name was Ed Linehan. And I walked in Mr. Linehan's office, and I said, "Mr. Linehan, I need this book." And he said, "You need the book?" I said, "I need this book, man." And he said, "Well, you know, that belongs to St. Mary's, blah, 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 blah." I opened up the book. I said, "This is my great-grandmother, sir. We've been trying to get our hands on this book forever in my family, and I will be the first one to literally have it." And Mr. Linehan, I don't know what he did, but he gave it to me. And I took it home, presented it to my mother, and it's been in the display case, because she was living here before moving back to Alabama, but it's been in that display case now probably since 1994. And we've had that one. And then I came up on another one that was in the West Haven Library and got that one. So now I got two. So yeah, my great grandmother, she's in a national book.
For those who don't know, she was part of the walk from Montgomery
to Selma.
Selma.
Yep. Or Selma to Montgomery, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
But, a lot of people know that walk because it was thousands that did it. And my grandmother was a part of it, along with my, you know, two of my mother's siblings, my Uncle John and my Uncle Danny and my Uncle Phil. And so, great history in Alabama, you know, but most of my life was here. My mother sent me to Alabama to get me away from the hustles and bustles of the city, you know, so I went there every summer, mostly, to make sure I just stayed on the right path and they get in city trouble.
those summers away, long gone and part of the past. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Rasheem Dixon. Rasheem, I'm going to ask you, because you were somewhat of a prodigy, singing at a very early, early age. How old were you before you knew you had this talent? Because, I mean, you were hitting the church circuit like a beast by the time you were like 8, 10 years old.
Well, I was raised, it's crazy, you know, God working in mysterious ways. Everyone that my mother placed me around from the time I was a newborn, first of all, my father can sing the stars from the heaven. Jerry McKnight, I'm related to the McKnight family. The only reason I carry the Dixon last name is because they weren't married when I was conceived. So I come from a very musical family, sing, dance, athletes, and they honed, you know, my mom, she kept me around singers. So my godmother, she could sing. So at the age of 2, she would stand me in front of her and just sing songs like Jesus Loves Me. You know, she would stand me in front of her and she, Jesus loves me, this I know. And she would make me sing it back to her. And, you know, I wasn't raised on the doing the runs and, you know, it was more about getting the song across with feeling. So at 2, she would just sing to me. So by the time I hit 3, and what made her teach me a gospel song, it was funny because I always liked music. We was at church and the pastor asked, he said, do anybody have a song to sing before I go into my sermon? And little 2-year-old Rashi jumps off the pew and, you know, I'm still about the same height now that I was. But I jumped off the pew and I headed to the front and not knowing, you know, my godmother, my mother, they all was trying to grab the back of my shirt before I could make it up to the front. But I made it up there and the pastor was, you know, he was telling them, leave him alone. Let him sing. Let him sing. And I got up in front of the congregation. I said, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. And, you know, it was cute, but it made them take, you know, made my godmother take me home and learn gospel songs. And they just went to working with me and had great teachers over the years, man. Great teachers. And so that's how it started. It started all in church, Varick Memorial AME Zion Church, St. Paul's AME Zion Church in Alabama, you know, was tearing the highways up as a kid, dude. Tearing the highways up. And it was from church to church, church to church, church to church, just singing. And then things changed. Things changed. When I hit that 13, 14-year-old age, it was like the Luther, the Teddy P, the Gerald LaVert. That was just... It was more, it resonated with me. And not only that, the pay was better. Let's just be honest, the pay was better. Like, for me to say that I was going to a church to sing, it was always you doing it for the love of God, you know? And mm-hmm. I did it for the love of God. However, when I got that other call and we want you to do here and now at this wedding, you know, that was $200-$300 just for me to sing at somebody's wedding. So, yeah, man, that's what it was for me. I love music and always have and always will. So
how important is it to stay humble? I mean, you are really talented and been so for a long time, but you don't come across as a person and be like, hey, look, I can sing.
Well, honestly, I stay humble because that's what was taught to me. I had a class at Educational Center for the Arts, and that class was called Musicianship. And musicianship, what it taught you was the fact that you're not the only one in this field. And you have to be able to work with everybody. You should be able to work with everybody. Matter of fact, it's mandatory because most endeavors, undertakings, when it comes to entertainment, it's a production. So it takes more than just you to pull the production off. And, you know, like I said, I've always surrounded myself with great musicians, great people. And so being humble, it's not, I guess it just comes easy to me because I've been around great musicians who just keep you humble. You know what I'm saying? Every time you're around them, it's a learning experience. So, you know, it's just, like I said, it's just a, I can't even put it into words. It's just to hear somebody say, oh, Rasheem, he's humble. It does me well, you know, because you don't, anybody who walk around and tell people I'm humble.
No.
So to even hear it is just, I guess, maintaining being humble. Like I said, is I've been around some of the greats.
Or are you also just a little bit afraid of getting, still whooped up on by mama if you cut up?
Well, you know, mom is no longer with me. She not physically, but I carry her with me every day in my spirit. I carry my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my godmother. As you notice, there was a lot of women that had a hand in my upbringing. There was also some great men, too, who put me on the road and traveled with me and made sure my name got out there and was known. One of those people is a gentleman by the name of Harold Gray, you know. Harold Gray, honestly, I got a story where, you know, with my mom, he took me out one night, and I probably was only about 8, 9, and we went to a banquet in Waterbury, and of course, I was in tuxedo, everything, man, and I never forget, this was my first time seeing a steel drum band, and oh my God, they rocked this party. However, back then there was, you know, people didn't have cell phones like that, so Harold picked me up maybe at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, when Harold got me home, it was like almost 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like 8, 9 years old. And my mother lost it at first. You kept my baby out. And she asked me, she said, what did y'all do? And when I told her the experience of the steel drum band and, you know, just interacting with people and seeing people in their element of having a good time and laughing, she was real receptive. You know, she was like, okay, well, I didn't make him your mentor for nothing, you know. And Harold has been around me ever since I was a kid, man, 7 years old, Knights of Pythagoras. Yeah, man. So it's been some great people in my life. I will always say that. Some great people.
You had the right kind of attention. You were talking about that earlier, that, you know, that people were attentive to your development. Something that you see lacks a little bit now when it comes to certain youth that are lost, or individuals that are grown that are still lost, that, you know, still need that attention.
Yeah, well, the attention that I got wasn't just attention. It was training. It was training to prepare me to be who I am now. And the one thing I live by is the fact that I never say what I can't do. I never say what I can't do. I can do anything I set out to do. It might be a little work. It might hurt a little bit. I might cry in the midnight hour when nobody's around. But the end result is always me smiling. You know, you get some people, when they get hurt, their get back is they, you know, they want to do something revengeful. Or, nah, my get back is growing me, man. Like, you know, I want you to see me from a distance and go, wow. You know, and that's it. Like, you know, and that's what I try to instill in everybody that I come, that comes around me. Like, you know, even rocking with you. I like rocking with you, Jose, because of the fact that I can learn something from you. You know what I'm saying?
And you need to stop that. You're listening to the Electric Drum. on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and this is the way too humble Rasheem Dixon. This young man, now, you said that music really helped you throughout your life and got you through some hard times, man. Growing up, right, you become now a band. Do you ever get to, like, make an album?
So I made a four-track EP back in 2001. Then I took a break because I moved to Texas. We did an album release party. I used to play with a band. I started off with a band called, everybody knows them now as Mocha Jam. But when we started out and the name of the band was Magic. All of us went to Educational Center for the Arts. You had Mark Esposito, Fred DeLeon, Tim Palmieri, Adrian Tramontano. And at that time on drums, it was Mark DeLucia. And we used to play at Humphreys East every Friday for their happy hour. Now, when I say Humphreys East, I always like to say when the Italians owned it, because that back portion of Humphreys that everybody remember, it wasn't there. And that back portion came because we were hot on Friday nights. So that back portion first was a tent. I don't know if anybody out there remember that, but it was a tent. And the gentleman who owned it by the name of Tony at the time, when winter came, he ran like a makeshift heating system inside the tent, and we rocking this night. And the fire marshals came and shut it down, you know. But yeah, I do have singles out now. Matter of fact, I gotta shout my man Juan Castillo out. I got to. Because Juan was the one who gave me somewhat of a blueprint for what I needed to do. So I released a single called Special Night, Special Mood. This was probably back in like 2012, I believe. And, you know, a lot of people, Jose, they'll say, oh, you're on radio, and that's why your music sometimes get played on radio. Well, let me set the record straight right here and right now on the electric drum with Jose Candelario. I have to submit my music just like everyone else. And I submitted my music, and I was told no. A Special Night, Special Mood. It was like, nope, too slow. Can't play it. Not gonna play it. So yeah, I got that door closed in my face, right? And next thing you know, Juan called me and said, yo, man, you really want to make an impact? Give people a two-step. He said, we all know you can sing slow music, Rasheem. You've been singing slow music ever since, you know. So give us something now. Hint came, I'm ready. Also, shout out to Tasha Harp, because my first music video was shot in her spot, Harps. And it was around COVID. She wasn't even open yet, you know. And big ups to Rasan Langley, who was the storyboard writer and production manager of it, because I reached out to Rasan and I was like, yo, we need a place. We need everything. And he reached out to Tasha, and Tasha was like, yes, I'm getting ready to open in a bit. No problem. So we shot this video under the constraints of only six people, maybe seven, eight able to be in the building. And we pulled it off, you know, we pulled it off. So, like I said, I do have music streaming. I'm streaming on all platforms.
Yeah, we jumped a lot. I know you want to get to the plug, but I mean, there's so much growth that you took place in New Haven. You went to the Educational Center for the Arts.
I did.
What kind of experience was that? Because ECA, as we know it now, I mean, it's on Audubon Street. It's mm-hmm. very well known. Mm-hmm. How impactful was that experience in having access to that kind of education?
It was, I'm going to tell you like this, going in, I didn't appreciate it, because you first go in and you already have set in your mind what kind of music you like. Let me say that. You have set, you're, in all honesty, you have on blinders because you're looking at one thing. So ECA for me, it was the best experience because it opened me up to all realms of entertainment. It taught me not to be one dimensional, you know. So going to ECA, not only was I in the music department, but the music department then teamed up with the dance department. And then sometime we teamed up with the theater department. So you got all of that. You got a chance to work on your acting skills while working on music. You got a chance to work on your dancing skills. You know, that's why I tell people all the time, no, I can't dance, but if you choreograph something for me, you know, I could keep up with you. You know what I'm saying? But I've never been a dancer like that, but I can move. And so ECA, I will say it was a great foundation for me to build and know that there was more out there that I can do outside of just always having to sing, you know. And I'm finding that now, like just even with being with radio, you know, I get more gigs just speaking than I do singing now. And I love it.
I can tell by the bass in your voice that you're ready for late night rhythms. Got a lot of bass in your voice for being a very, you know, you got scales there when you're singing. You got a nice high register. But with that said, you go on now from ECA. You got your, you start, what was your first bands like? I mean, was it with these guys from ECA? Because you mentioned that.
You know what? You're right. We skipped off. Moga Jam. We was at,
Magic.
We was Magic.
How did Magic come together?
Magic came together. They was already playing and doing their thing. And we all met each other at ECA. Bobby Esposito, God rest his soul, he put us together. You know, I was performing at ECA. His son was a saxophone player there. I want to say Tim was in the jazz band. Tim Palmieri was in the jazz band, guitar player. I want to say he was. And we all were there, and Bobby just, I had to do a solo one night, and Bobby approached my mother and was like, yo, he can sing. We need him in the band. And like I said, we started off as Magic, and you will know when you're gaining traction. Because we were in a rehearsal and Bobby come running up into the rehearsal space, which was in his house, screaming, ah, we're almost there. We're almost there. And we're like, what are you talking about? He's waving this letter in his hand. It was our very first cease and desist letter. And it was basically telling us we could not use the name Magic anymore. So what they did was they flipped the name, you know, Magic. They switched some stuff around. Tim Palmieri sitting there, and all of a sudden, it's like, instead of Magic, how about Mocha Jam? Mocha Jam. Yeah. And honestly, it was so dope because, you know, you got almost 5-6 Caucasian guys playing behind this African-American boy. And it was like it was a niche, Mocha Jam. It was just boom, that was it. And, you know, we've seen members come and go in the band because, you know, Tim and them, they developed the Breakfast with Psychedelic Breakfast, which is an awesome band and travels everywhere. And then they took in now world-renowned producer Jeff Gittleman, who's right here from Woodbridge and went to ECA as well. But, you know, if you listen to people like her and a lot of Rihanna, he's all over their albums now. And he live in California, big producer now, you know. So, yeah, man, we had a good childhood, you know.
I just want to thank you for sharing that there is a lot of talent locally. not everyone always makes it, you know, to the big time, but you can live a good life and enjoy your talent here in your own city. And you're a testament with that because you built your name. You went through some hard times in Texas, but came back and music was still here for you.
It was still here, man. When I say coming home was my savior, I know so many people who want to get out and leave. For me, they call it New Haven. It was safe haven because to come back and receive the love I received, able to move into position and get employment and, you know, like I've always told people, I've never really had to, you know, to God be the glory. I've never had to work two jobs, you know, the way some people have had to do. You know, I've always been able to work a full-time job and then do what I love.
You still had two jobs. You need to stop playing. Always had two
when you
jobs.
Doing what, yeah, when you doing what you love, though, man.
I know. It doesn't come across as work, but, you know, you can sell that to someone else. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Rasheem Dixon, all his great stories. I appreciate you, my brother. Let me just say this. I always like to give the talent. I'm going to have to call you, and there's just not a guest. The talent. Final words to their community and people and constituents and your thank yous.
So to my community, I would like to say, keep doing what you're doing. Keep striving. Keep being better. You can be whatever you want to be. To my youth that's out there, start embracing one another better. You know, appreciate life because, you know, I'm looking around and seeing like life is so easy to take, you know. Start appreciating this life. Start appreciating one another. Build off of one another. Learn from one another. My thank yous, you know, always want to thank the man upstairs. You know, I want to thank my family for their support, my children, everyone. You know, definitely big ups to Juan Castillo for believing in me, you know, because even with that, that's a whole nother story on my arrival back, man. Juan saw me cry like a baby in his office when I first got back from Texas because I just didn't know how I was going to manage, you know, but I pulled through. So thank you to him and to everybody who continues to support me, you know, all my Facebook followers, TikTok followers, you know, big ups to you as well. And to you, Jose, thank you, man. Once again, thank you for having me. You know, every time you and I chop it up is always educational, humorous. You know, it's all of the above, man. So I definitely appreciate you.
You can stop. Okay, you can stop. You're already on the drum. You're good. This is the Electric Drum. We still could sit here and have a whole conversation about DIYing it. You do have a music studio in West Haven?
No, the music studio is in Brantford. We've been open for about a year and some months now.
All right, so what's the address?
65 North Brantford Road in Brantford, Connecticut.
Oh, what's the contact info?
Contact info, you can contact me at 203-904-7580. Or you could go to thevibehouse@gmail.com and just shoot us a message if you're looking to produce music, if you're looking to record your next situation. We got that set up for you.
We can also talk about, you know, your style as a musician and performer. I mean, you do not skimp. You do come with a full band, you know, and yeah, you don't compromise on price, but you do put quality live performances out there too. What the same number for that?
Same number for that. 203-904-7580. Okay. Or you could go to thevibehouse.com.
For yep. any, at Gmail.
At
the
Gmail.
Vibehouse@gmail.com. For all bookings.
Yep.
For Rasheem Dixon. Always a good time. Thank you very much, brother, for your time.
Thank you, Jose.
This has been the Electric Drum with 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city of Jose Candelario. That has been the kind words of Rasheem Dixon. And like always, to my general audience, thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreestyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreestyleLibre.us.